This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy. Shipped nationwide. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Want to teach your kids financial literacy but not sure where to start? Greenlight can help. With Greenlight, parents can keep an eye on kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens use a card of their own to build money confidence. As a parent, you can send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and more. It's a convenient way to run your household, customized to your family's needs, and the easy way to raise financially smart kids. Get started with Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Wake up! Wake up! Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Matt Eberflus can fall on the sword for calling a run blitz at the end of the half. Let's play the play
game. Yeah, we just got to be tighter there. You know, he popped the run in the last one. I called a pass pressure, and that's on me. And I got to do a better job there.
Terrible. But come on, man.
Was that like a 55-yard?
Yes.
Did you see what the blitz was?
There's nothing more egregious in terms of his bad judgment and poor leadership than putting Caleb Williams back on the field to subject to a possible injury that he might have suffered.
I don't think he should have been out there for the 2 minutes. I hope he's okay.
I hope he's okay. I hope he's okay.
Eberflus said it looked like he was limping.
I did see him. He limped off of there a little bit.
Matt Eberflus, do you listen to yourself speak?
Yeah, we're just getting work and getting timing.
A day later, hearing him in those terms defend the dumbest decision of the day, that if Caleb Williams wakes up with a bruise, it's on him.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Yeah, we're just getting work.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Good Wednesday morning, Chicago. We're getting to work here. Yes, back to work on the Mully and Haw Show. Mully is out today, a little under the weather. We are here talking sports after an extraordinary night, obviously, for the country and politics, locally, nationally. Within the past hour, the Associated Press has declared that Donald Trump has defeated Kamala Harris and to win the presidential election. A historic night, a huge news event, and obviously, if you stayed up way too late watching the election results, you feel as worn out as we do this morning because it was something you couldn't look away from. It's a presidential election. We will be here to talk sports. That is why we're here. It's why Sports Talk Radio exists, to kind of give you a little bit of a respite, an escape, something to we all can agree on. We all can agree on the Bears are bad and they need to get good, and they're having meetings to do that. But obviously, to come into this show and you have to acknowledge what's going on. And it was a crazy night of watching all of the coverage flipping around. I don't know what you chose to do, CNN or your favorite network or whatever the case may be. Maybe listen on the radio. But it was something that was predicted to be a close game in sports terms, a pick 'em, if you will, and turned into a blowout. It was definitely decisive. It was definitely not as close as people thought it might be. The final numbers will come in, but within the past hour, if you are just getting up, the Associated Press has declared Donald Trump the winner in the presidential election. So we will be here all morning talking about winners and losers in the trade deadline and what the Bears are doing to get ready for their Sunday matchup against the Patriots. We'll be talking about the general manager meetings in San Antonio. Bruce Levine will join us at 8:25. There's a huge hockey event at the United Center tonight. Patrick Kane back in town with the Red Wings. Connor Bedard with the Blackhawks. Bedard versus Kane. I thought they might be teammates one day, but now they are adversaries, opponents, and it's going to be a fun night at the United Center. There's a lot to talk about. There's a lot to get to. And yes, 262, it was a landslide political victory for Donald Trump. A lot of other stuff, implications locally in the political races. We'll maybe get to the bottom of the referendum on the stadium financing. We need to follow up on that, get some results if we can. Busy night in the political world. And obviously, sports never sleeps. So we will get to that. Want to start with the trade deadline. Want to look at what happened outside of the Bears. We'll start with the Bears because it was a minor deal. Khalil Herbert was traded to the Bengals. That broke on our show on Tuesday. And he joins the Bengals. And did you see his response via Twitter? He had a praying hands emoji. Thank God were the words, I believe. And trying to decipher what Khalil Herbert meant by basically sounding grateful for the Bears dealing him. I don't know that it's a sign of, you know, texters 312-644-6767. You're already active. Appreciate your feedback. Like to hear what you have to say. We'll get to calls later in the show. But I don't know that that's a sign of a dysfunctional locker room that's spilling over into the social media spectrum there, as much as it is Khalil Herbert grateful and thankful for an opportunity to go to a team that might hand him the ball or might have him active on a Sunday. That wasn't going to happen in Chicago. Khalil Herbert was in his fourth season, 1,791 yards. Overall, he averaged 4.8 yards per carry, but he was a sixth rounder of the Ryan Pace regime. Ryan Poles didn't draft him. Ryan Poles wanted somebody else. Ryan Poles likes DeAndre Swift and Roschon Johnson. And oh, by the way, Travis Homer, he's in front of him on the depth chart. So I think maybe Khalil Herbert wasn't necessarily taking a shot at the Bears on the way out the door at Hallis Hall, as much as he was expressing thanks and gratitude to be going to a team that is quarterbacked by Joe Burrow and might actually use him in the offense. The Bengals are a worse team than the Bears right now. They're 4-5. So he's grateful for the opportunity. I don't know if he's grateful for going to a team that has higher playoff odds, bigger playoff aspirations. I know it's the Bengals. Their history is more recent in terms of playoff success. You've got Joe Burrow. They've been to the Super Bowl. But are we sure the Bengals are going to the playoffs? AFC North, tough division. NFC North, tougher right now. So Khalil Herbert goes out the door. I think we talked about him so much on Tuesday, both on this radio station, around town, of doing the pro football show, the big pro football show on Chicago Sports Network, and obviously it was a big topic. I think he got so much attention because the Bears did nothing else. There was nothing else to consider. There was nothing else to weigh, assess, evaluate. And so Khalil Herbert gets all the attention. Yes, 312. Come on now. The Bengals are a way better team. But they're underachieving right now. They need to turn things around. Chase Brown had his first 100-yard game over the weekend. They've got some injuries at the position. They never replaced Joe Mixon. Khalil Herbert, happy for him. But do you look at Khalil Herbert and you see 100-yard rusher if he gets 15 carries? I don't know that I do. I've never been that enamored with his ceiling, if you will. Solid guy, good kick returner, good guy in the locker room. But I just don't know what the Bears are missing because he's gone. So that is the Bears, that was the Bears' contribution to the trade deadline. The winner of the day, I felt like, the winner of the day at the NFL trade deadline yesterday wasn't necessarily the Lions. We'll get to what they did in replacing Aiden Hutchinson. But the Washington Commanders getting Marshawn Lattimore made them more legitimate when you think about their playoff viability. Made them a team that you look at the NFC East. And what do you think about the Commanders? Jaden Daniels has won a lot of people over. He's legit. He's a rookie quarterback. You don't doubt him anymore. Their offense is clicking. They've got Cliff Kingsbury pushing the right buttons. They've got an offensive line that they went out of free agency and addressed with veterans. Novel concept. How about that? And then the defense would be the issue. The secondary, as we saw against the Bears, vulnerable. The Bears did not take advantage of that for various reasons, but that was maybe one of the weak spots. You get Marshawn Lattimore, and he is their Jalen Johnson. He suddenly becomes one of the best. Well, he's already one of the best cornerbacks in the league, but now he's on a team going places. And he gives Dan Quinn, expert, elite play caller. If we can call Matt Eberflus an elite defensive signal caller, we can call Dan Quinn that too, because he's a defensive-minded head coach, and now he's got a cornerback to make his defense better. I think the Commanders won the day. The Commanders, I think, came out of the trade deadline as big of a winner as any team. That includes the Lions. The Lions went out from the Browns Za'Darius Smith. Za'Darius Smith is making his way through the NFC North. This is now his third team. Can you name the two players that have played for all four NFC North teams? Dustin Rhodes, King of Trivia. You're not really King of Trivia, but can you name the two players that have played for every NFC North team within the last 15 years?
Oof, 15 years.
It might be more than two, but that's all I could find.
Higher profile or?
Oh, these are not high profile players.
Yeah, not high profile. I mean,
but they're both ex-Bears.
I wish Les was here to help us with this, to be honest with you.
I was there.
Wait a minute.
I was there.
Both ex-Bears.
Yes. Well, they have to be, because they played for all the NFC North teams. The Bears were in the NFC North.
Okay.
So ex-Bears, ex-Lions, ex-Packers.
I was thinking maybe one could be a current Bear.
Ex-Viking. $500.
Yeah, dead air is not good on radio, so
that's okay.
I'm stumped. Listen, somebody call in. I mean, call or text. That's a good one.
Quarterback is the position for one of the players, and we've had him on this radio station as one of the experts to break down. I think it was Caleb Williams. Maybe it was Justin Fields. I don't know.
So that would be Daniels.
All these quarterbacks,
right?
Get confused.
Daniels.
All these ex-quarterbacks. I mean, Daniels. No. J.T. O'Sullivan.
Oh.
J.T. O'Sullivan.
I would have been here all day.
And then the other one was a tight end. Most recently, he played in the last couple of years with the Bears.
I feel like it's going to be another O somebody.
Robert Tonyan. Yep.
Wow. God, I forgot he was even a Bear.
Well, he didn't have a very memorable tenure. So Za'Darius Smith is on his way through the NFC North. And I think what the Lions did was they did what they could do to replace the best pass rusher having the best season when he went down in Aiden Hutchinson. The Lions are thinking Super Bowl. The Lions are thinking that now their defense is more whole and Za'Darius Smith gives them a chance to feel like they can rush the passer and regain some of the things they lost with Hutchinson out.
But what's interesting about the pass rushers, and I'm always one to say a pass rusher worth his pads can just come in and go get the quarterback. But one of the guys that a lot of us, and I'll put myself in this boat, wanted the Bears to look at was now the former Patriot and current Falcon, Jadon, right? He's
Matthew Jadon.
He's got 1.5 sacks.
Right. He didn't have 20 like Ryan Poles is afraid of.
There's no slam dunks with that position that the guy's just going to come in, put his hand in the turf, and go get the quarterback. I mean, I'm shocked by that stat that he has 1.5 sacks so far. That's pretty wild.
It's pretty wild considering how much
hubbub there was over his availability.
Oh my gosh.
And the feeling that Ryan Poles missed the window.
He was going to put the Bears over the top. He would be the difference. He was why you would compete in the NFC North.
Remember those pensive looks on Hard Knocks? Ryan Poles ponders whether or not to go get Matthew Judon. Yeah, it was very dramatic. And turned out to be a miss. Big deal. Not a big deal. But I think a bigger deal is that Ryan Poles did not adequately address the offensive line at the trade deadline and in the offseason. The biggest moves were Ryan Bates and via trade and Kieran Amagaji via draft. Neither of those guys has contributed. Now, that's a bigger, broader picture and story for another day. Maybe today.
Yeah, the Ryan Bates one is the one that we don't know because he never played. But they had high hopes for him.
Yeah, I know, but he's injured.
They had high expectations for him.
I know, but he has not been able to fulfill them because he can't stay on the field.
That seems to be a problem. They can't seem to find offensive linemen that can stay on the field.
So I was a little disappointed. Maybe if you want to pick out one thing the Bears at the deadline didn't do was they did not go out and supplement their offensive line with a veteran who might have helped at whatever the position. I don't think you're going to get Cam Robinson out there. The Vikings beat everybody to the punch last week, traded for him on a Tuesday, started him on a Sunday. They're set, and they replaced Christian Darrisaw at left tackle. That's how you get things done. I don't know what the asking price was or if the Bears were even involved or even if they felt like they were fine at tackle, but they're not fine at tackle. You can't find a position on the offensive line that the Bears are fine at now that Darnell Wright is out indefinitely with a sprained MCL. So the Bears, I'm going to say stand pat, essentially, at the trade deadline. I know they unloaded Khalil Herbert. They got a seventh rounder for him in return, big deal. That's the going rate and currency for a depth piece for other teams. You saw it exchanged several times yesterday. There were eight deals on Tuesday. Mike Williams, probably the other big name that went to the Jets. To the Steelers.
You don't speak out about your quarterback and then expect to stick around, right?
Well, he probably spoke out because he wanted to get traded.
Very good, exactly. I haven't checked his Twitter, David, but maybe he also did the prayer hands.
What is the emoji for thank God I'm outside of Aaron Rodgers' grasp now? I'm out from under his thumb. That guy went from the Jets to the Steelers. From dysfunction to stability. He is prayer emoji, prayer emoji, prayer emoji, smile. That guy he may be the big winner on trade deadline day. Because Aaron Rodgers was not happy with him, let everybody know about it, and now he is a Pittsburgh Steeler. I was surprised at how many deals there were in. You go back a couple weeks before the trade deadline. The NFL trade deadline moved back now to November 5th. I wouldn't recommend they do it again on an election day. Kind of, it's very distracting if you're trying to follow everything. But it is something that spurred more action than expected. NFL contracts are messier to maybe exchange than other, like say the baseball trade deadline. Also, the NFL systems are harder to learn in season maybe. So you don't see a lot of trades typically, traditionally. But this year, I think you're starting to see a few more, and there was some activity that things moved the needle, especially at the wide receiver position. When you look big picture, which of the diva wide receivers, if you will, if that's a category, which of the diva wide receivers will make the biggest impact on the teams they were traded to? I think that's an easy answer, even though it's a rhetorical question. DeAndre Hopkins, having two touchdowns the other night, gives Patrick Mahomes an element he's never had. This is a go-up-and-get-it guy. This is a guy, if he stays healthy, if he can, you still can see him getting off the line of scrimmage, shaking the coverage, and getting in position to be a safety valve for a guy that doesn't necessarily need one. But Patrick Mahomes now has a weapon unlike any he's ever dealt with. Chiefs got more dangerous. Chiefs and the Lions did what they needed to do at the trade deadline. And to me, they're the class of the AFC and NFC, respectively. So the Bears get rid of Khalil Herbert. The rest of the league fills some holes. And speaking of
number one wide receivers. I'm not going to say diva wide receivers. The DJ Moore incident is interesting, and I call it an incident now because of the way that him running out of bounds and staying out of bounds, that has taken on a life of its own. I want to know more about what that says about the Bears' accountability and this entire discussion we've been having, frankly, since the Washington Commanders loss about that and holding players accountable. I want to know if there's anything connected between what DJ Moore did and the team meeting that we heard about from TJ Edwards yesterday. The Bears had a team meeting. We can debate the value of team meetings. When you have team meetings, what's Ozzie say? Bad teams have team meetings. And the Bears have had their share now. I'm very curious if what we saw from DJ Moore, and the more that we see it and the more that we talk to people about it, the more I want to hear from DJ Moore in terms of him addressing it. And I think we will later today at Halas Hall. He typically meets the media. He talks to us every Monday at 8, but then he meets the media on Wednesdays. And he definitely will be asked about this, and Matt Eberflus will be asked about this. Did it come up at the team meeting that the Bears had about accountability and where they go from here? I think it's different because the more I thought about it, Tyrique Stevenson is just an inexperienced, undisciplined, talented, but reckless player. Reckless, I mean, reckless maybe more emotionally, unprofessionally. If he wants to gather himself last week after he got demoted, he goes in the locker room, comes back, and you still don't quite know what you have in Tyrique Stevenson. He turned his back to the line of scrimmage for 4 seconds. We all know how that went. And I don't think that many people were that surprised because it was Tyrique Stevenson, prone to being undisciplined. DJ Moore knows better, and DJ Moore is a leader. So if DJ Moore did what he is being basically alleged to or accused of doing, checking out in the middle of a play, and I don't know that he was, but I want to hear from him because I am giving DJ Moore the benefit of the doubt until we hear otherwise, because I respect him, because we have a rapport, and this is would be out of character for a guy that's been a consummate pro. But if he checked out like he's being accused of doing, that's a bigger problem for the Chicago Bears, because he is a team leader. He is a captain. And it means something different when you have guys of his stature reacting in that way. You can dismiss Tyrique Stevenson and say he's going to not start and rotate every third series, and this is a good way that we're going to discipline him. If you have DJ Moore, and this is related at all, and it was addressed, if it was, at a team meeting where there was an airing of grievances, it was Bears Festivus, the airing of grievances. But if it was addressed, then I think that becomes a bigger issue because it's not going to go away. It leaves a more indelible mark. But we'll get into all of that and the value of team meetings and what direction the Bears are going as they get back to work Wednesday at Halas Hall. The injury report will be a big one. Want to see where their offensive line sits in terms of stability and availability and all those things. The college football playoff rankings came out. We're going to talk about those at the pick six. Notre Dame was 10th. Alabama, the only two-loss team in the top 12, making Saturday against LSU an elimination game. Their playoffs start Saturday. Roll Tide. I don't see a three-loss team getting into the top 12, especially based on the way that we saw this first top 12 emerge. The matchups would be fun. We'll take a look at the brackets. I mentioned the Blackhawks. They host the Red Wings tonight. Blackhawks are 5-7-1. They've had a good road trip. 3-3-2 on the road. They're competitive. They're interesting. They're fun again. Patrick Kane returns to the United Center. We'll talk to Chris Chelios because now he's not going to be there to hog the spotlight away from Patrick Kane again, is he? Remember, that was the last time Kaner was here in February when they retired Chelios' jersey, hung it from the rafters, and then Patrick Kane and the Red Wings, I think, won in overtime that day. But Patrick Kane is back. That'll be a lot of fun at the UC tonight. Shohei Ohtani underwent shoulder surgery on Tuesday to repair the labrum tear he sustained during the World Series. Labrum tear sounds like it hurts. So now you understand a little bit better why Ohtani looked a little bit out of character lunging after those outside breaking pitches and wincing every time that he did. They said he will be ready for spring training, and I think it's fair to assume he will be, but you wonder what effect it'll have on the best hitter in baseball. And I think that after the season he had, we can say and agree that he is the best hitter in baseball. All right, so there's a lot going on today. Got the election that is over. If you are just waking up, getting to work, AP declared Donald Trump the winner in the presidential election. But we're going to talk sports, and we're going to get to the pick six, and we're going to do it all next on the Mullin Haw Show, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Want to teach your kids financial literacy but not sure where to start? Greenlight can help. With Greenlight, parents can keep an eye on kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens use a card of their own to build money confidence. As a parent, you can send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and more. It's a convenient way to run your household, customized to your family's needs, and the easy way to raise financially smart kids. Get started with Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. It's better over
here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
It's Pick Six with Mullin Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mullin Haw. Pick Six with Mullin Haw starts now.
With the Bears making only a minor move at the trade deadline, dealing Khalil Herbert to the Bengals, a seventh rounder comes back to Chicago. Were you expecting more? Will anyone miss Herbert?
I think I was expecting more in terms of other position needs being addressed. I would have liked to have seen even a veteran depth piece on the offensive line. I know those are hard to find. It might be unrealistic. I am curious if, for example, Ryan Poles ever picked up the phone to get Jerry Jones, if Jerry Jones would answer the phone between interviews he's granting all day long down in Dallas, or whoever's taking those phone calls talking trade. I know Jerry Jones does a lot of talking. I don't know how much of it is involved with actual trade conversation. But Zach Martin's 33 years old. He's a guard, and he would help the Chicago Bears. And the Cowboys are, you talk about a team unraveling. They have a very long spool of thread to unravel, and they're going nowhere. So I wondered about that. They didn't do that, and they didn't do anything. I don't really count this as a move. Nate Davis, still a Bear, couldn't find a taker, still paying his salary, still having that baggage. I wonder where that's going. He's still in the locker room. But Khalil Herbert would have gotten cut, likely. They would have released him, I would think, to give him some sort of option to land elsewhere. I don't know how much they valued him as insurance, because Travis Homer was there. And you have to go now to your fourth running back. You're not that worried about it. To me, this season, he became just a guy. He became just a guy because this regime doesn't value him as much as the Pace regime that drafted him did. And I think that you look at 1,791 yards, 4.8 yards per carry. He was solid, but hardly spectacular. Not sure you're going to miss him. And he's getting a lot of attention today because the Bears did no other moves. So I wanted them to do more, and I was fine with them getting rid of him to the Bengals.
Yeah, I mean, he deserved to be moved, right? He was not just sitting there rotting on the bench. So you can't you can't be upset about that. But, you know, yesterday was the trade deadline. But you could have made a trade before we got to this point, Ryan Poles. Did yesterday's inactivity signal potentially, I'm done with this group. I'm done with this head coach. I'm done with this offensive coordinator. I'm not going to give away any more draft capital to try to help this group out. I, Ryan Poles, am now squarely focused on the 2025 season, the 2025 draft. I'm not going to let any capital get out the door to try to help this group that I no longer want to work with. Or was it just the fact that all the other halfway decent offensive linemen that got moved before he could get involved?
That would be a pretty quick pivot from in these guys to I hate this team.
But could it have happened with the Fail Mary? Like, was that when he made the decision for sure that, and the other thing, David, is that this division has been so good all year long, and he realized I can't catch them. I can't take the North this year and never give it back. So I am best case a third place team in this division. So I'm not giving any more draft capital away. I've already texted Trace Armstrong and said, you know, shame on you for tricking me about Shane Waldron. Okay, shame on you. And you and I will not be doing business again. I might even be looking for a new agent.
Wow, that's taking a leap. Real quick before we get to Brandon. I doubt that that's the case only because if you are going to abandon hope and move on from this season, you are risking sacrificing the development in the second half of Caleb Williams, which this season is all about. So you need offensive line depth to help protect him so he can ascend. And if you abandon that, I think that you are negligent at your job.
I agree with you, David. I expect a little bit more, maybe offensive line depth, like you want to protect your franchise quarterback. When it comes to Khalil Herbert, though, I mean, it's kind of the same way when Poles did for Fields. I was like, I'm going to do you a favor. I'm going to get you out of here. I mean, you last year you was the number one running back, and now you're just you're not even the number three almost because, you know, Travis Homer. So I like this move for Khalil Herbert. I mean, you get a seventh-round pick. That's cool, whatever. But I expected a little bit more. Like I felt like he did. Poles took some calls for Nate Davis to feel to see if anybody wanted him. Like, because, I mean, he's just another person who's just sitting there. I know he's not on the best of terms with the coaching staff right now. But with this offensive line the way it is, I mean, either he has to play or do something for him. But I just expected maybe a little bit more on the offensive line. I think you said it yesterday, David, that maybe thinking of fielding calls for Keenan Allen. He's on a one-year deal. See what you can do for him or something like that. But I feel like that Commanders game and that Cardinals game kind of sealed the deal where people wasn't expecting much from the trade deadline from the Bears.
That's one of those questions. You know how hard that is to answer.
That's the voice of Dan Weider. He'll be here answering questions at 7:25. Caleb Williams has thrown 41 screen passes, tied for the third most in the NFL, but his 78% completion on those screens is the second worst in the league. How do you explain that?
This is something I thought was worthy of further exploration. We addressed it briefly on the Big Pro Football Show on the Chicago Sports Network last night. And good research by our producer Casey there. And I think that I don't understand it at all, except for these are short passes that they like a lot. 41 screen passes. There's only two other teams that have thrown more than the Bears. Yet they're pretty inaccurate. They have the second worst completion percentage. Is that accuracy? Maybe. Is that poor design? Definitely. Screen passes are about timing, practice, and finding the rhythm of a good screen pass, getting your back and your quarterback and your lineman in sync. Now, I don't know how many of those are passes that were just sidearm throws to DJ Moore at the line of scrimmage, and that counts because those haven't been great plays either. None of the screen passes that Shane Waldron has called or designed seem to be things that you remember. Can you remember a screen pass that worked? Well, yeah, maybe. DeAndre Swift had one. I think that he went for over 50 yards. That's an explosive play. I'm not sure if that was great design or just DeAndre Swift being good in space. But I want to keep an eye on this. This is one of the more confounding, confusing stats that seem incongruous, and I just don't know why it's happening. It could be all on the quarterback. I doubt it. It could be all on the offensive coordinator. Probably not all of it, but a lot of it. Just something to keep an eye on. The Bears are not a good screen pass team, and a lot of it comes from practice, precision, and timing, and they have none of those.
They don't have any of those, David. It's a great point. I would love to see like a cut-up of all 41 to really be able to answer this question properly. Now, these are, according to the people putting these stats together, these are known screen passes or are these checkdowns? You know, that also I think needs to be part of
design screens.
Design screens. So that's a lot of design screens. You know, obviously the completion percentage should be higher, but you know, did Caleb bounce the ball to these guys? Did he throw it low? Did he throw it high? How many of these passes were dropped? How many passes? These are things that we just don't know. But I did hear a stat yesterday about how Caleb Williams leads the league in overthrowing balls. As well, that's another stat that's not, you know, going his way. That's not a good one.
That's not a good one.
But again, I think all of this, both of those stats could also go back to our first question, and that is, in my answer to yesterday's question, until this offensive line is at least like average, you know, until we get 3 weeks in a row where the same five guys are playing together,
right?
It's really hard to judge what's going on up there.
I'm with you guys. Like it's to me like a timing, holding the ball, the screen pass stuff. I mean, the screen pass to DJ Moore, blow that up, get rid of it. I hate seeing that play. And I feel like the only screen pass that worked that I can remember so far this whole season would, like you said, David, the one to Swift, and then I think the preseason game too, the one to Swift as well. So I don't like it at all. I think it's all more on poor design, and I think, and I'm sorry, I'm gonna have to. I don't want to keep attacking the offensive coordinator, but Shane Waldron, I'm sorry, it goes to him. It makes me want to go back and look at some of even the Seahawks' like offensive plays last year and see. I don't remember none of those screen pass. I'm thinking of just highlights of Seahawks last year. All I remember is like big plays to DJ Metcalf and Lockett. I don't remember no screen pass working like that or even to set them up like that. So I don't like it. It don't work right with this team. It just don't work right with the personnel that they have outside of maybe Swift. I think it's just a big problem on the poor design of just Shane Waldron. I think it lies more on him, and I think it lies more on the bad offensive line that Dustin was saying too. It's just a combination of all those things.
Yeah, it's a good question.
After our talk with Will Venable yesterday, how much better do you feel about what qualifies as success next year and what else stood out about the conversation?
Will Venable came across as somebody who's got a lot of charisma, more than I was told he might have or possess. The book on Will Venable was that he's an easy guy to work with, consummate pro, smart, bright, and can express himself well, good communicator, collaborator, all of those things. But maybe there would be a part of him that wasn't going to be so comfortable in the spotlight, being the spokesperson for a team twice a day for 162 games a year. I didn't see that. I didn't sense that. I felt like there was a willing participant in a really engaging conversation, a guy who was as comfortable talking about his basketball background and his mom's idea to try out for baseball as he was debating the value of a manager in today's modern MLB. Will Venable is going to make the White Sox better, I think, ultimately, because he already makes the White Sox smarter. And they need that. You can see him working and growing in step with Chris Getz. This does feel like and sound like a partner for the GM. I don't know about the definition of success. I don't think that he was specific. I don't think he needed to be. I am not caught up on year one victory totals. It's a pipe dream for them to be anywhere. If they win more than 62 games, I think people are going to be celebrating that. Look at that improvement. Because if they win more than 62 games, it means they won't lose 100. I think they're going to lose 100. But I don't think that's going to discourage Will Venable, because at some point in time, the definition of success will be you know it when you see it. And this will be a team that plays with characteristics of a smart baseball team because they're managed by a smart guy. And they're going to do the little things right, ideally. Let's hope that's the case. It certainly seems like we can expect that based on the first impression.
Real good first impression. Enjoyed that interview. The other thing, I think he's going to be very relatable with the players. He's a good athlete. He's good a guy that played a high level of college basketball. He's a guy, obviously, that had a long career in baseball. And I think that helps. I think when he speaks it to the player has to respect who is saying it, and they can see themselves in that person delivering the message. And I think that can go quite far.
I'm a Sox fan, and I'm actually, unfortunately, right. But I actually like this move. I was kind of shocked by this hire, too. Like, especially the fact that he turned down previous jobs, respectable ones, like with the Mets is one of them last season. I love this move, and I think this is one of the best kind of stories that I heard hiring Will since the campfire milkshake. Like, I'm being honest. Like, this – I love this move. I love the way he talked. Everything was good about him. The thing with him is, how much can a manager really impact winning? And it's not about even winning, probably development too with this team. And I'm really more intrigued to see how they would do with the development more than the actual wins, because this still is a bad team. So now you got to look at pretty much their farm system to see what can he do and what impact can he do. I'm interested in seeing his coaching staff. I like the question about David Ross to see if he would join the staff. I really am intrigued overall with this move, because I'm actually shocked that they actually got this. I know he's a first-time hire, but still, he's respected around the league. I love his pedigree overall. I think this is actually a good move by the White Sox, and they needed this.
Dustin, what about the Rossi thing?
I think that's incredibly interesting. I said to Mitch, actually, yesterday, we were talking about it, and I think David Ross needs to get back into baseball.
I agree.
I don't think he can sit out again. I get it. He's been playing the game for a long time. He's been away from his kids for a long time, and he probably needed to recharge the batteries. But at the very least, he needs to get back on the four-letter network or a three-letter network and be a broadcaster, right?
But do you think that the Sox would energize him or discourage him? Because I think they're going to lose a lot of games, but I feel like he turned down the Yankees bench coach offering a year ago from Aaron Boone.
He probably interviewed for the Reds job, right? Do we know that he did for sure?
His name was linked, and he said he talked to them. The report was that he talked to them. Okay. I don't know how formal it was.
Okay, but then you understand Terry Francona.
He was getting paid by the Cubs, though, to stay away.
Of course.
So this was a paid vacation, essentially. But if he wants to get back to the grind, I think he comes back to the Sox as a bench coach with a guy that he knows well. He's going to be respected. His value is going to be obvious in a market that appreciates him. It wouldn't shock me if he wants to get back, if that makes sense to the Sox too. He gives you credibility.
Could do a whole lot worse, right?
Wouldn't that be a demotion though? Like, just thinking the mindset of David Ross. I led a team, you know, I was a part of the Cubs, and I did this with the Cubs, and now I'm with the team that's coming off 200 loss seasons, and now I'm the bench coach for that team in the same city that I used to be a manager on the north side.
I think that's a part of it, but I also believe that there are no other managerial openings this offseason, and if he wants to get back into it, get his name out there, he could do worse than going back to a city where he is appreciated and his stature is going to be, and reputation, celebrated more than questioned.
Well, there's no question.
Patrick Kane and the Red Wings play tonight at the United Center against our Blackhawks. Is there any doubt Kaner gets a rousing reception? If the Hawks stay competitive, would you want them to pursue bringing him back to Chicago before the deadline?
Well, there's no doubt that he's going to get, a rousing, standing O, whatever, to make him feel appreciated. He should. He's done nothing to alienate the fan base. He's done nothing but move on. He was traded. He went to New York and then Detroit. And you look at what he's doing this year. He's still a productive player. He's played 11 games. He's got 8 points. This is not somebody that is just hanging on for dear life. He can be an asset, and when he gets going, he's 35 years old. He turns 36 later this month. I don't know if the Red Wings, they've got a lot of depth. They want to go for it this year. They want to make the playoffs. They might be able to do that. They might also, if they're out of it, they might look to flip Kane at the deadline. I love the idea because I love the idea. But I don't think Kyle Davidson loves the idea. And I think Kyle Davidson has made pretty clear that this leadership group will create its own identity and it will be organic. And Connor Bedard doesn't need a guy like Patrick Kane, you know, hovering and casting a shadow over everything else that Bedard might be doing. So I don't think it's realistic. I will continue to hope for it, and I will be curious to see how Kaner plays tonight.
I want to go back to what you just said, David, because I agree a lot, and you know a lot about this. So it doesn't matter what I think about this. Kaner, you should cheer him. You know, I know I'm always the you should if you there would be no reason not to cheer him. I can't think of a reason not to cheer him, not to stand up, not to salute him. I'm not sure they'll do another video tribute or anything like that, but no reason to boo or not respect him. But why do you think the general manager, and it wasn't even a hesitation. I mean,
I know.
There's no shot that they're trading for him unless, you know, management says we need to sell more tickets or some sponsor is going to come in a la what happened with the Bulls a few years ago with Dwayne Wade. Like, okay, we got this massive sponsor. If we put Kaner back on the ice and put the sweater back on this guy, it's going to be an influx of cash over here on the west side of town. I mean, I don't get it. Why the Heisman to Patrick Kane?
The quest to move on. I think a new era. And maintain everything about that commitment.
He's gonna get cheered. He should. I don't want to see Kane come back to the only time I want to see Kane come back to as a Blackhawk, if like towards the end of his career, like one of those one day contracts, I'm gonna retire as a Blackhawk. It stayed with that too. I don't think Davidson wants Kane back. I think it's time for a new regime. We have Connor Bedard. Those days are now over. Those are great years with the Blackhawks during the time that they were winning. But Kane coming back, I don't need to see that. Even if they're competitive, I don't think Kane's really the answer. I would like to get someone else, maybe even someone a little bit younger to pair up with Connor Bedard or someone a little bit younger to help with the scoring. Because right now, looking at this team, I feel like the only problem with the Blackhawks is, you know, they got some good pieces, but they need that Kane and Taves type of feel where you got Connor Bedard. He needs that other pairing. He needs that Pippen with him overall, I feel, for this Blackhawks team, because that's why I feel like he's haven't been scoring overall, and he's helping out because they're all focused and lasered in on Connor Bedard, and the other ones got to get theirs, but they need another star, and I don't think Kane's really that person.
Why is your heart so cold?
That's a really loaded question for me, David.
That's the voice of Stacey Dale. She'll be here talking Bears, talking NFC North at 9 with David. With the Bulls now having lost two in a row, how big is tonight's contest against the Mavs down in Big D? What's the key, and do you think Zach LaVine ends up playing, or is it wise for everyone that he just waits until he's 100%?
Zach's suffering from an adductor strain. He's on the trip. We saw the social media photos. He made the team flight. I hope he plays. Mavs, tough challenge. I don't think they win tonight. I think the Bulls are in the midst of a little bit of a losing streak. Nobody seems to be that concerned about it. Maybe because they're not that concerned about winning streaks. I want them to be. They're entertaining when they're hitting their threes. Vooch is hot. I don't think they're winning tonight. And I think Zach will try to play because he wants to play. Do they want him to play? I guess we'll all find out. But tough challenge for the Bulls tonight.
Well, unlike Joel Embiid, I think Zach LaVine wants to be out on the court. I question a lot of things about Zach LaVine. I do not question his toughness. I think if he's on the plane and with the team, that's probably a good sign if you're looking for an indicator. I would personally not play him. I know last week Casey Johnson reported that the Bulls had to protect Zach LaVine from himself, that he would have played in that game, but the Bulls were the ones who told him, no, that's okay, took the jersey and high tops away, and he sat that one out. They are a 10-point dog tonight, guys. 10 points, according to Circus Sports Illinois. But this is the kind of game that the Bulls would win. A sleepy game in November on the road, not everybody paying attention, coming off a day off. These are the I would not invest on the Mavericks, let's put it that way, if we're interested in any of that. And again, I'm still not crystal clear. Bulls management tells us they want to win. I don't know if they really want to win if they were really hooked up to a lie detector test.
I hope Zach LaVine plays. I want him to play. They actually are better when he's on the court with this team overall. I'm kind of with Dustin, too. You got to protect yourself. Like you got to protect yourself with Zach LaVine, because at the same time, you don't want to hurt his trade value, too. Him being injured does not help at all. And I don't want him to get re-injured, or now it's more damaging. He's out for a longer period of time, because I just think this is the transition period. This is where you got certain players on that team, to me, like Vooch and LaVine and, you know, Torrey Craig. You got Carter, like players that probably are like trade assets along the way. And I just feel like this is a game, too. I do agree. That 10 points, I would take that in a heartbeat, because I feel like this would be a team that they win. They're going to beat. You're going to be shocked. This is going to be a team that's going to beat good teams, because the good teams are not expecting or looking forward to playing the Bulls. And then they'll lose to bad teams or teams that you think they should beat. And that's normally what it is. But when it comes to Zach LaVine, I hope he plays, but I want him to be 100% and make sure that he's good. I don't want him to get like re-injured and playing hurt.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
What was your reaction to the college football top 12? Who's overrated? Who's underrated? Any sleepers you see emerging?
Well, I didn't necessarily see many surprises or maybe imposters, if you will. I know the certain parameters of the committee and the 12-team playoff format. BYU and Boise State are in there. If you're evaluating on tape, neither one of those two teams probably make it. But we're not really evaluating the top 12 on tape. These aren't the 12 best teams according to football coaches, and the eye in the sky doesn't lie. This isn't the case. They want that to be the case, but no, it's not. So I think it made clear to me you're not going to get a three-loss team from a major conference like the SEC in. Two-loss Alabama is the only two-loss team in right now. They have an elimination game Saturday against LSU. I'm okay with Oregon being number one. That will take care of itself. If they win the Big Ten, they deserve to be there. Indiana is very interesting to me. They are a team that you look at where they are in the top 12 and their unbeaten status. They've got to play Ohio State, and then maybe they have to play in the Big Ten championship game. Maybe. But I don't know. Are they going to be there if they have one loss? Perhaps. I love the possibility of the pairings. I love the bracket nature of this and all the potential matchups. CHSN had playoff rankings and they had a bracket that included Indiana and Notre Dame. Now, as a kid who grew up in Northwest Indiana, that would be a tremendous college football playoff matchup.
Indiana boy.
Yeah, thank you, Pat. I would love that. Other than that, I like the bracket. I like the 12 teams. Feels like they're on the right track.
Feels like they're on the right track. And rightly so, we are all talking about a elimination game this Saturday in the SEC between Alabama and LSU. But a team that I find to be a bit overrated, really, really good on defense, but I'm not sold on their quarterback one little bit, and that is the Georgia Bulldogs.
Yeah.
So Georgia is at Ole Miss. Ole Miss already has their two losses. They already have their two losses. Got a couple of decent wins. I don't know that Georgia, if Ole Miss can score and get this game into a shootout, per se, can keep up. So I think Georgia could be on upset alert, and a loss to Ole Miss could knock Georgia pretty far down and put Ole Miss into consideration. So I think you've got two elimination games here in the SEC this weekend. Now, the problem with Indiana, and David, I would love to see Notre Dame-Indiana. That's fun. Another one I saw, Notre Dame-Penn State. That would be fun. You know, an old school, two classics. That would be another fun opening matchup. But Indiana still has to play Ohio State. Now, if Indiana beats Ohio State, Indiana's in. But if Indiana loses to Ohio State, Indiana's out. So
even with one loss?
Even with one loss. I do think so. I think you would take a two, as an example, I think they would take a two-loss Ole Miss team who beat number two Georgia over a one-loss Indiana team that lost to the one team in the top 25, top 10 that they played.
I'm looking at this rankings. It looks pretty right. I like it. It's fair. There's nothing that really shocks me. If you want to talk about overrated, I've been saying this for the longest every time I get a chance to talk on here. And I'm not just saying this to come at you, David, or Dustin. I do not like Notre Dame. I like the players. I do not like Notre Dame. They're the most overrated team. Their schedule is always soft. There's only
Dustin kills Mike.
I control the mics.
Okay.
But at the same time, they're just overrated to me. Now, Indiana, I do like Indiana. They're a feel-good story. So that's to get back on your good side, David. I do like Indiana. But overall, a team that you want to watch out for, Ole Miss. I'm going to be watching that Georgia-Ole Miss game. I really like the quarterback there for Ole Miss. So there's a team to watch out for.
Good stuff. That is our pick six, picking apart the top stories of the day. When we come back on the Mullen Haw Show, it is time for the extra point. The Bears had a team meeting. We will discuss next on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to teach your kids financial literacy, but not sure where to start? Greenlight can help. With Greenlight, parents can keep an eye on kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens use a card of their own to build money confidence. As a parent, you can send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and more. It's a convenient way to run your household, customized to your family's needs, and the easy way to raise financially smart kids. Get started with Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mullen Haw on 670 The Score.
TJ Edwards shared his thoughts about the Bears team meeting on Monday right here on The Score.
You know, Floof's kind of right. He leads the team meetings and things like that. But I just felt like we weren't sugarcoating anything. You know, we weren't. And again, you know, stuff that kind of was said, whatever, I'll keep in-house. But I also think that it was just very genuine and real. And it is a understanding that, you know, from coaches to players, we all need to be better, you know. And I think when every single one of us can kind of, you know, look within ourselves first and understand that, but also get the feeling that it's not like, you know, everyone's thinking, you know, it's this guy or that guy. It's all of us being in this together and trying to get this fixed. And that's going to start with tomorrow's practice.
All right. Your reaction to what you just heard from TJ Edwards, and do team meetings reflect a team that's falling apart or one that might be coming together?
Well, I think the Bears are closer to falling apart than coming together. I respect TJ Edwards, and for the record, he offered that during that interview. It was the way that he opened. He shared the detail of a team meeting. He shared a lot of things that you wonder this week if they would have been so open about. I am curious, as I said at the beginning of the show, if that team meeting, whether it was the purpose of the team meeting or it came up during it, but I do wonder if DJ Moore, the clip that everyone has seen by now, him running off of the field and staying off of it, even though he was out of bounds and he was maybe gimpy, but he was back on the field to play later. I wonder if the DJ Moore incident was addressed by Matt Eberflus, if the meeting talked about the need for accountability and effort and optics and things that reflect leadership and commitment and attitude and effort. Things that you didn't really see from the Bears. They didn't have the execution and effort that matched the Cardinals' intensity. So I think team meetings are good if they work. We don't know if this one will work for the Bears. They're reeling. They're out of control. A downward spiral. All the ways you want to describe it. Huge week for the Bears against a team, the worst team in football. They have to take care of business at home. Maybe the team meeting will be a spur to that. If they win, we can use it. If they lose, another meeting?
I don't know. You're running out of time.
Well, I guess part of this is define team meeting, right? I mean, it would be almost as crazy if the Bears hadn't had a meeting following that loss on Monday morning back up at Halas Hall. If reports, oh no, we just went in, talked to the trainers. We didn't even watch the tape. That would be like the hubbub made over the lack of 15 plays. Right? I mean, you got it. The players only meeting, I think, are the meetings that you're looking to avoid, except if you're Caleb Williams. Something else that kind of got, in my opinion, brushed under the rug a little bit because of all the bad things happening with the Bears was Caleb Williams' comment about a week or two ago that the really good teams, they're led by the players. Mm-hmm. The players are the leaders on the really mm-hmm. good teams. Okay, well, you know, you got to have a meeting. The Bears are headed in the wrong direction. Another analogy, the home run that was heard around the world in the World Series a couple days ago, and, you know, the Yankees really kind of sort of recovered, but not enough. They didn't get swept, but they won one game. Could that Fail Mary be that for the Bears? Is this something that they're not going to recover from? You know, we talked about you can't make one game turn into two. Well, I'll tell you what. If it turns into three against the Patriots, and look at that number, David. They started off as a touchdown favorite. It's all the way down to 5.5. That's mm-hmm. a pretty big move. We're going to talk to Joe O about that in a few minutes. That's a pretty big move. And I'm just worried now that there is a massive hangover for the Bears from that Fail Mary.
There's too much talk about team meetings. I mean, I do understand what Dustin's saying. I feel like every team has a team meeting. But I feel like when you publicly always mention it, and I know they're getting asked the question, but at the same time, I take a team meeting or players-only meeting, those things, as a point of when it's public, okay, we're falling apart. And they already had two losses already, and it doesn't look good right now. I feel like, to me, I don't want to hear no more talk. Unless they get asked, of course, after today, they shouldn't get no more talk about team meetings no more. I shouldn't hear the coordinators talking about team meetings. I shouldn't on Friday. I shouldn't hear that either. So this should be the last, because it's the 24-hour rule that Eberflus says. So after 24 hours, let's turn the page.
I was surprised. He offered it, and he offered that other players stood up after Matt Eberflus addressed the team. So that sounds like it was more than one speaker.
And to me, that to me shows that this team is really not over the Fail Mary. This team is some players on the team. I'm not saying DJ Moore are probably questioning the coaches, and that's probably the bigger problem at hand.
Before Sunday's big game, tune in 9 to noon for your local Ford dealers pregame show right here on 670 The Score, presented by Aurelio's. Olin Cruz, Patrick Manley, and Mully will be live at the flagship on the Fox in St. Charles as they get you set for the game. Immediately following the game, instant reaction from flagship on the Fox and the Great Clips postgame show presented by Sony Pictures, Wonderverse Chicago, and TimberTech Decking and Railing. All of it heard right here on The Score and the Odyssey app. We come back, Joe Ostrowski right here on the Mully and Haw Show. Mully out today, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Money, 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 money.
Welcome back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Mully out today. Time now to bring in our guy from BetQL Daily on the BetQL Network, Joe Ostrowski. And like all our guests, Joe joins us, and he's brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Good morning, Joe. How are you?
Good morning, David, and you guys are right. There is certainly a move there in favor of the Patriots, which may be surprising to some. It's probably surprising to some to see the Bears, where some people speculate maybe there's some quit in this team right now to be a 7-point favorite. But our friends over at Circa, and that's one of those sports books that I lean heavily into because they take sharper bets, like mm-hmm. big bets. They're at 5.5 already. So that went from 7 to 5.5. So a lot of Patriots money coming in early in the week.
That's quick, isn't it, Joe?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's immediate reaction. I mentioned on Friday with Bernstein and Harris, I couldn't find a soul that said, I'm going to bet the Bears against the Cardinals. It was tough. And the people that were on Arizona, they obviously dead on. You know, one thing that is pretty interesting is we already have a few common opponents between these two teams. Tennessee, who New England pushes to overtime before losing. Houston, Bears are in that game final score-wise, but not really if you watched it. And then Jacksonville, very different results. Patriots lose by multiple scores there. Bears took care of business in that one. But, you know, there are a lot of themes here. You know, head coaching issues or under fire, terrible offensive line, rookie quarterbacks. So people are looking and say, is there really that much of a difference? And that's why they bet New England early.
Joe, do you think that is going to result in more money being bet and waged that Matt Eberflus will be fired next?
So hours after Dennis Allen was fired, they reposted the odds on the next coach to be fired. And it wasn't a big surprise who the favorite was. It was Doug Peterson. What was shocking was Matt Eberflus was a long shot at 25-1. A couple of hours after that, there was so much money coming in on Eberflus to be the next coach fired. He is now the second favorite right behind Doug Peterson at plus 150. So it went from plus 2,500 to now plus 150 in a matter of hours. We know the Bears' history. I understand the argument against it. But when you see a long shot number like that and everything that's happening here with the Bears, I understand completely why people bet that.
Joe, in 30 seconds, the college football bracket or rankings were released last night for the bracket in the 12-team playoff. What was your first inclination seeing those teams?
First takeaway, four Big Ten teams are in, but the big question is, will there be four Big Ten teams in the end? We expect Penn State, even though they lose over the weekend, to make it. Of course, Oregon, Ohio State, Indiana. What do they have to do? Is competing against Ohio State enough? Because if they lose, they're probably not going to be in the Big Ten title game. It feels like they're going to give, you know, any chance that they're going to remove them. As far as it's so early, but most exciting potential first round matchup, Penn State in South Bend. That would be the matchup in the 7-10 right now.
Old school.
And odds makers are saying, psh, that would be a coin flip. And I know that would be a lot of fun. So I'm really looking forward to that. The first round with the home fields, lot to talk about, lot to go there.
Great stuff, Joe. Really appreciate your insight and your advice.
Thanks, guys.
That's our guy, Joe Ostrowski from BetQL Daily, right here on The Score. When we come back, Ryan Poles being idle, standing pat at the trade deadline. Does that mean he's looking ahead to next year already? What about this year? 312-644-6767. What do you think? It's Mullin Haw. Mully out today. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.